Hello, everyone, and welcome to Petite de Queen's Claim Your Career Crown podcast. I'm your host, Lynn, and today we're joined by our VP of Operations, Amanda, and our special guests, Troy Carter and Patrick Lung. And I am so excited for the conversation because we're going to be talking about what we can all do to solve climate change, including what big organizations must do. So about our guests, Troy is the co-founder and CEO of Earthshot Labs, which is building the technology for planetary scale ecological restoration. And Patrick is the co-founder and CTO of Earthshot Labs, and he was a senior engineering lead at Google and the CTO of Two Sigma Private Investments. And together, they are bringing the audacious scale and vision of startup technology to the planet's ecological and climate crisis. They have focused on financing renewable energy and agricultural projects for the last 6 years. Troy, Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having us.
Hi there. Great to be here today.
Well, we are thrilled to have you. And for anyone who's joining us for the very first time, please don't miss a single episode and go ahead and subscribe right now to Claim Your Career Crown wherever you get your podcasts. And take that moment to share the love and click all 5 stars for your review. We would really appreciate it. Let's just dive in. Patrick and Troy, can you tell us about what you do and how Earthshot Labs helps the planet?
Yeah, so it's pretty clear that the planet is in a bit of a crisis. We see that through increasing frequency of natural disasters. So many, many ripple effects of climate change are happening right now. And just the last couple of years, we've seen that really hit public consciousness as well. And so a lot of the attention to address climate change and ecological collapse is around things like renewable energy or electric cars or, you know, decarbonized fossil fuels, et cetera. So we're focusing on something a little bit different, which is actually trying to identify the real root causes of these multiple systemic collapses, which really have to do about nature itself. And talking about land, forests, soil, water, oceans. And so what Earthshot Labs is doing is building technology products to scale up incentive structures that pay people to use land differently and give people the information that they need in order to make ecological decisions about land. So very specifically, we're doing 3 things. One is building a massive ecological simulator that takes in many, many variables with the hypothesis that if we can measure nature more accurately, then we can make better policy, investment, and landowner decisions on the ground. And the second thing we're doing is, okay, so we've got this awesome scientific, multinational coalition of people contributing to the simulator. We need to give everyone access to it in a way that's actually usable rather than some supercomputer model that only academics can access. We're building a product called LandOS, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's an operating system for land that landowners can use to determine the ecological and financial outcomes of doing things like reforestation or conversion to regenerative agriculture. And the third thing we're doing is, hey, you know, this isn't just a software problem or a money problem. It's really about, you know, trees and water and stuff on the ground. And so we're also doing operations and pioneering a model for reforestation and land restoration that can be applied across many different landscapes. So we're starting out with a 17,000 hectare reforestation project in Panama and then partnering with landowners all around the world to do actual on the ground project implementation.
That's amazing. That sounds fantastic. My goodness, especially to have that access for the people who are the landowners and that are using the land for their, for their livelihood, that they can have really accessible tools so they can make better decisions with the facts and figures that you're providing.
Yeah, a lot of it's also about inspiration. I think many people out there just sort of aren't fully aware of what possibilities there are for the land in terms of ecological restoration. And so part of it is showing the numbers in terms of ecological impact and in terms of financial return, but part of it also is about showing visually what could happen in the future. What could the land actually look like and feel like?
Right. That's incredible. For a more broad look, how should we be addressing climate change as a society?
Well, that's like a very multi-layered question. So right now, and over the next couple of weeks, there's this conference, and in Glasgow, a bunch of different organizations and governments get together. So policy is really important to come to coherent global ways of understanding what should we do about nature, what should we do about industry. And so there needs to be government policy, there needs to be financial incentives. And, you know, a lot of individuals are like, okay, you know, like, I don't know what to do personally. And the true thing is like, it's actually really hard to make a big individual impact. Like, do you go recycle better? Or do you like drive your car less? These are pretty small iterative changes. So recognizing that actually this is a real issue, we're also trying to give everyone on Earth a meaningful way to engage with the climate and ecological crisis. So one thing is a new app that we'll be releasing soon called Biome, where anyone can be a citizen scientist and collect data about trees and biodiversity measurements. And it turns out, hey, these are actually really important for us to understand. And so people can actually contribute in a real way towards building this global model, which then in turn actually drives money from governments and corporations into land projects. So that's just one example of trying to take the fully centralized power from governments and put it in the hands of people to go make real differences.
I think there's also a kind of a deep spiritual recognition within Earthshot and also in other organizations that we work with, that humanity needs to really shift to valuing nature. So it sounds like an obvious thing. You know, we all love trees and animals and, you know, they're part of our lives. But really deeply valuing nature as part of the way that we operate as a civilization, as a species. And we're doing what we can to help make that shift happen in terms of encouraging people and inspiring them and so on. But ultimately, we're going to keep kind of making these mistakes and doing these things that are not in line with nature's needs until we have that deep shift inside individually and collectively.
Yeah, it's so much is focused on short term instead of the long term and the long term gain and benefits to everyone. So I think that to me, that's one part of the shift is thinking about, you know, not just the immediate, but where we want to, you know, where we want to be and what we want for, you know, our children, our grandchildren, et cetera, so that they can experience, like, you know, going through, I mean, I think it was last year that the redwoods burned, this year the sequoias burned, I mean, here in the States, right? And we're talking about just all over the world, just massive ecological destruction that's happening because of this, the climate change and the impact on the heat. And there are things that individuals, even though we're a drop in the bucket of this gigungous thing, that just conscientiously thinking about our actions and what we're doing and what we're purchasing will make a collective impact. And so I guess that sort of really ties into what we can do as individuals to help or stop climate change. Even though we're one little sort of like one vote, it's still collectively we have strength.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And it doesn't take millions and millions of people shifting. It takes a few thousand in many cases to have that kind of collective power of change, so for others to be inspired by and to start emulating.
So what are your suggestions that everyday people, like the people who are listening to our audience, some things that they could just be, maybe they haven't thought of, you know, like running a shorter shower, making sure they're recycling their, you know, their plastic, their aluminum, their cans, all those things. What are some other ideas that you can share for people to take action on?
Yeah. So those are all great suggestions. But more fundamentally, the most valuable things that we have to give are our time, our career, because if someone goes from a career in oil and gas, or someone goes from a career in investment banking and says, I'm actually going to commit myself to building solutions from the ground up to address ecological restoration, that's a big gift. And or joining an organization like Earthshot that is doing something similar. And that's actually something that's very important, is building a bridge between the skill sets that we've developed over our lifetimes and applying them to a problem that really matters, that we feel with our hearts is what our purpose in life is. And many people don't feel like that they've realized their purpose in life by working at the jobs that they currently have. And what we're doing at Earthshot is saying, hey, we'll hire you, but this had better be your dream job. Like, you had better be like, this is what you want with your life. And what we're seeing is that so many people recognize that in themselves, that actually what I've been doing isn't quite in integrity with what I want to do. Or I didn't think it was possible for me to actually work on exactly what I wanted and get paid for it. And so I'm just here to say basically that, like, it is possible. You don't need to compromise at all if you bring a level of competence and spend some time researching and joining. And, you know, one very concrete example is we have a Slack channel for people who are just interested in learning how to contribute their skill sets and their knowledge, time to climate change and the ecological crisis. So join the Slack community, and there will be many, many like-minded people that you can start businesses with, collaborate, get hired. And there are many communities like that now.
So I myself went through a big shift in the last couple of years. At one point, you know, I was working at a fund that was doing, amongst other things, oil and gas exploration. And so I went from that to co-founding Earthshot. And I would say that probably the biggest thing that people can do is go inside and reflect on appreciating nature and reflect on what kind of a world do you want to live in? Because we are facing a pretty stark choice, right, between the status quo, which leads to more destruction and just not as beautiful a world where there's less nature and less beings to share this planet with, versus a world where there's beauty and abundance and just more love in the world in terms of people appreciating their surroundings and, you know, using their time and effort and genius to essentially help to restore and heal this planet. So just going inside and reflecting on that, and I think the rest will come. The rest in terms of behavioral shifts, like maybe starting to compost or maybe switching your, you know, electricity source to some renewable thing. I mean, all these sort of surface level things that help materially come from a deep care and a deep appreciation inside. And that'll help guide people in terms of career choices and in terms of day-to-day behavior and habits and so on.
Yeah, you bring up some really great points about being really intentional about your time and your skills and how you're not just affecting how you are affecting the planet, but changing how other people care about the planet and live their lives in a way that will be good for the planet as opposed to destructive to it. So I think that's really powerful what you're both talking about. And actions by individuals are great, but we do know that it's major corporations that are really driving climate change. What are the things that large corporations must do if we want to continue to have a habitable planet?
Yeah. You know, I've been pretty inspired actually by corporate action in the last year. Like, a few years ago, trees were not cool. And now trees are cool. And what we're seeing is movement from the inside of corporations, big oil companies, big tech companies, airlines, you know, industrial companies, where individuals within that organization are suddenly championing reforestation projects, purchase of carbon credits, you know, decarbonizing their operations. And that's actually, I'm really optimistic. And I think if we can continue that track, we won't have any problem in addressing the symptoms of the climate crisis. What is deeper is, okay, actually, what are the more fundamental financial structures that we're perpetuating and, you know, inequality that is built into organizations that has caused humans to sort of go down this path? And we see things like Indigenous Land Agency and and deep connection and intimacy with particular pieces of land, like that is a that's a deep driver of health. And so corporations can do a lot to stop doing harm. And then in order to take the next step, in order to actually be like, we are doing something good for the planet, like we are a keystone ecosystem species on Earth that is contributing to the beauty and wealth of the planet, that's gonna take a revolution inside the culture of how organizations actually operate, with the kind of communication between people, with the level of love for your coworkers, with the level of respect that you have in a team, with the level of like autonomous management. So that's another thing that Earthshot is doing, which is pioneering ways of doing business internally and communication and management and salaries and everything to be in coherence with what we actually envision healthy human systems look like. We don't see that reflected in most organizations right now. So that's another layer. In addition to this global impact, how we do it is really important.
I mean, you know, having worked at a number of large corporations in the past, like, I know that at some level they sort of all want the same things in terms of market leadership, in terms of innovation, in terms of inspiring their employees, in terms of values, really believing that they're doing the right thing in the world. And this is the biggest opportunity you'll ever see. If you are listening to this podcast and you're a leader in one of these big corporations, you have in front of you the biggest opportunity to have the kind of impact that will result in the organization that you want to work in. And it's really simple. Just think about how much does your organization care about the planet that it exists in and the impact it has on the world, and what would it mean to do your very best as an organization, as an individual, in order to really help out.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are some really great points. What does the future of work look like to you? How can organizations meet the needs of employees and the planet and all stakeholders?
Yeah, that's a great question. We think about this a lot. And the truth is, we're experimenting. From some fundamental theses that if someone is independently passionate about the purpose of an organization, then we don't need to convince them to do their job. They're already doing their job, and they just want a platform to be able to do it together with us. And so one is making sure the organization actually has a pretty noble purpose, that the fundamental point of what the company is doing makes sense. And then hiring people who want to be on that journey together and who share that mission. And then I think a lot of the problems solve themselves. Then all these sort of like power dynamics between managers of and employees, you know, systems of management that are sort of aspirational. So we were inspired by sort of teal management, which is sort of a self-organized sovereign group of employees collaborating freely. And that doesn't work without a clear purpose and with independently passionate people. And we've seen it tried in other large organizations where it's sort of stalled because actually one of those elements wasn't there. So choose a purpose that really matters and find the people who want to be in on that. And I think a lot of problems will solve themselves. And just applying basics, in a way, basic structures of communication. Relating to people not as functional units of a business performing a job, but as comprehensive human beings that have lives, yes, personal, relational lives with emotions. And that is welcome. And that's important because it brings our full creative energy into something that we believe in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think having experienced a couple of these cultures, like, unfortunately, there's going to have to be some kind of undoing or some kind of like a real loosening of the constraints and the norms with which a lot of companies out there operate in terms of the way they treat employees and in terms of the way that people show up in their work. And a real essence of what we're doing with our organization is bringing a sense of really deep connection like people bringing their whole selves, their purpose, their energy, their passion, and being able to be vulnerable and share in a circle the love for what they're doing, the concerns and fears for the future, all these things. And there's a lot of power in that sharing, and there's a lot of purpose. And that's what we believe the future of work really will be for humanity, is people bringing their whole selves into this.
I'm so glad you talked about that, because I'm just so passionate about believing in that, you know, that if we really structure everything around compassionate dignity, respect, and transparency, that we can really build incredibly strong organizations and personal lives as well. It's just so important. And I think this is where you're talking about this intersection of this form of spirituality, you know, ceremony and business. And I'd like you to sort of share some more about what you mean by that and how businesses can really integrate the two.
Yeah, for us, there's sort of almost kind of no difference, in the sense that every day is a ceremony. Yes. You know, people ask us, like, how do you do all this, and where do the ideas come from? And a lot of it comes from barefoot hiking in the woods and setting intentions into the field. And I think for people who don't have a kind of an experience of ceremony, that might sound sort of like either science fiction or woo-woo, but that is actually the way that we've gotten to where we are. And that is the way we will continue to really guide this organization, is through ceremony. And so it's something that I think people just need to try out and experience. Mm-hmm. And it's been a revelation for me, not having as big a background in ceremony as Troy has had in his life. But it works. I mean, pretty much every intention we put out there into the field has come in a more remarkable and faster way than we ever imagined.
Yeah, and there's something about this. Like, so why do we judge when we go a little bit woo-woo with this? So, like, why is it not acceptable to bring this to workplaces? Like, sort of like, it has to be a mechanistic, linear path to go from here to here with a plan and a strategy. And so I think we're putting a stake in the ground that says highly competent, world-class technical people, scientists, software developers, finance, can actually go be smarter because they're tapping into the wisdom of life itself unfolding. And it's as simple as that. Like, it's actually a better way. And the proof is in the pudding, right? Like, give us a call in 5 years and let's see if this is a multi-billion-dollar company. Because the metrics of success of business as it has been, those boxes also need to be checked, right? One of the limitations of this sort of like way of viewing the world is that it's not often matched with like technical rigor or entrepreneurship in a way that actually sort of checks the boxes of capitalism. So we need to do both. Like, we need to build a bridge between how real change happens on the ground, very like rigorous technical systems and, you know, operations that are professionally performed and, you know, managing thousands or tens of thousands or more employees, and a way of setting intentions, reaching coherence and teamwork that we're like, yeah, this is actually how it works. And everyone knows this is how it works, but no one talks about it in their work. So I don't get it still.
Yeah. No, I mean, I absolutely, one of the things that I know that is really important to me, I mean, of course, our whole team, we remote work. I've been remote working even when in my corporate life for a long time. But, you know, looking out and being able to, I will take a break, I'll walk outside, just smell, you know, feel the leaves, look around and really just sort of embrace what's just in my backyard. And it's a really small thing, but it can that energy that I feel is complete refreshing, and I can come back to work inspired, and whatever the problem was, it's like, oh, I've got a solution now. And I find that really powerful. And I've always wondered, you know, why do all these corporations are just like steel and concrete, and they don't bring in the things that we are truly connected with, you know, on that level, so that we can work in an environment that's that brings that level of peace and contentment to us. So, I mean, that's just one of my thoughts.
Yeah, you really hit on an important point. I mean, we believe there's going to be a huge reversal in the way, in the settings that people work in, because let's face it, being in a sort of a concrete box, you know, devoid of nature is not the best way for us to bring our whole selves into our work. And we actually intend to build places for our employees to come and work in the middle of nature, close to the beach, close to the forest, where we can take those hikes every day and be inspired and invigorated by nature and fully be ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be phenomenal. I always wonder why all the sci-fi movies, and you look at the future, and they're always still steel and concrete structures. And it's like, okay, hello. Uh-huh. You don't think we would have evolved a little further than that?
Yeah, we will.
Well, Troy, Patrick, thank you so much for sharing how we all, as individuals and big corporations alike, can help solve climate change. And I know that our listeners are going to want to know more about where they can find you and find more about you.
So easiest, go to our website, earthshot.eco. Join the Slack channel if you're a scientist or software developer or designer, or just interested in learning how you can contribute as an individual. We'll be releasing LandOS and Biome, which are apps for landowners and also citizen scientists to use in the coming months. And just join the newsletter. And if you have any questions or just want to reach out to us, we're also fairly available. And, you know, whether that's a partnership opportunity or, you know, you're represent a corporation that wants to learn how to do this better, just reach out. Our team will get back to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, real pleasure talking to you both.
All right, that's amazing. We'll include those links. Yeah, Troy. Yeah, Troy, Patrick, thank you so much for being here. We'll put those links down below so that you can easily find them. And this has been such an important discussion. And for everyone who tuned in, if you have any ideas that you'd like to share, you can either leave us a comment down below. We love hearing your thoughts. Or you can also email us a question or even a topic for discussion at jointheconversation@petitetoqueen.com. And to stay current on all of our insightful episodes like today, our articles, our podcasts, which we were just on, webinars, resources, you can sign up for our weekly wisdoms newsletter at petitetoqueen.com. I want to thank everyone for listening. Amanda, Patrick, Troy, thank you so much for joining today. This has been amazing.
Thank you so much.